Good afternoon. Thanks for joining At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network this afternoon, the 20th of July. And thank you to our sponsor, Whole Foods Market, who is proud to support the independent farms and small business in our communities. Here's what's fresh in their produce departments this week. Note, availability is subject to change. From New York, yellow plums, sugar plums, red onions, and sour cherries. From New Jersey, peaches, green peppers, eggplant, cucumbers, leeks, shiitake mushrooms, spinach, arugula, red and green leaf lettuce, radishes, or is it radi, green and yellow squash, mint, sunflowers, and orchids. And from Connecticut, currant juice and assorted sprouts. So thank you, Whole Foods. And to our producer, Jack Inslee, and engineer today, Nat Wiener. And I'll start today's program with the Week in Wine recap. And in shocking news that James Suckling has left the Wine Spectator magazine. The departure of the respected wine critic who joined the U.S. magazine in 1981 was announced on July 14th, setting bulletin boards and blogs buzzing with rumor and speculation. Wine Spectator itself has offered little comment. Managing editor Thomas Matthews wrote on the magazine's comment board, "James played a key role as Wine Spectator became the most widely read wine publication in the world. He has decided to take a different path. We wish him well." According to Spectator, Suckling's tasting responsibilities will be taken over by senior editor Bruce Sanderson, who will oversee coverage of Italy, and James Molesworth, currently responsible for the Rhone and the Loire, who will add Bordeaux to his portfolio. All tastings will be moved to New York. Speaking from Los Angeles, the highly respected critic Suckling told Decanter.com he has left the magazine, which he helped found, to, quote, pursue other projects. You get to a point where you say, now what? I worked at Spectator for 30 years and it's been great. Now I've got some cool projects for the future, end quote. Suckling would not be drawn on what those projects are, though they include a lot of public speaking in Europe and the Far East, and new ways of distributing his tasting notes. He said he will stay in Italy and will continue to travel widely. There is no better time to go and explore the wine world, he said. And reported by the Wall Street Journal, the beer stimulus, that's the hope Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts and a bipartisan group of senators pushing a plan to cut taxes on the nascent legions of small brewers in hopes of stimulating hiring among craft brewers. The stimulus plan introduced by Senator Kerry would lower excise taxes on small breweries, among other considerations. Co-sponsors include Senators Olympia Snow of Maine and Ron Wyden of Oregon, whose states have some of the most breweries per capita. So-called craft brewers are one of the few industries to thrive through the recession. The segment grew 7.2% by volume last year and 5.9% in 2008, and has even become a haven for budding entrepreneurs laid off from corporate jobs. There's not that many success stories in American manufacturing today, and craft beer is one of them, said Jim Koch, founder of the Boston Beer Company, which makes Samuel Adams beers. Mr. Koch has been leading the charge for a lowering of the excise tax on small brewers. And my guest this afternoon will be Jenny Lefcourt from Jenny and Francois Selections, and we will be right back with Jenny right after this short break. Listening to At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network, www.heritageradionetwork.com. And this is your host, Aaron Fitzpatrick, welcoming my guest today, Jenny Lefcourt from Jenny and Francois Selections.
Thank you, Aaron, for having me.
Thank you for being here. Now, I know you came last week as a little preview of Roberta's, but this was your first time out here, yeah?
Yes. I've been wanting to come out here for a very long time. I've heard so many fantastic things about the garden and the food and the atmosphere here, and it definitely lives up to its reputation.
Oh, nice. Thanks. And the studio is something else, huh?
Absolutely. Fantastic. We have a nice view out onto the picnic table.
It is quite luring, yeah. Now tell us a little bit about your portfolio. I know we were speaking earlier, and you have a natural wine portfolio, which has some fantastic selections. And when did you get started?
Francois and I started the company 10 years ago, so in 2000. I had gone to France for my studies. I was going to be a professor of literature and cinema. Mm-hmm. And instead of spending all my time in the library, I spent a lot of time in wine bars. Okay. But I finished my PhD, but wine was a passion and an interest for both of us. And
where in France were you?
I was in Paris.
Okay.
At the time. And at the time, there was not really a term for natural wine. Mm-hmm. But Francois introduced me to a few Paris bistros, wine bars, where he particularly loved the wine. He just thought it really was different and alive and interesting. And we kept going back and back and tasting, and then pursued further and went to all kinds of wine tastings, and then started visiting winemakers and asking why is this wine so delicious and mm-hmm. intriguing and complex, even when the wines weren't very expensive. And it turned out that every wine we loved, the winemaker had a very similar philosophy in terms of what he was doing, both in the vines mm-hmm. and also in the cellar.
Interesting. So you were drinking wines just side by side, and some of them were turning you on, and others kind of just felt flat. And the ones that you were really intrigued by were the ones that you sought after when you were in travels?
Exactly. So it turned out, you know, our company, Jenny and Francois Selections, we bring in all organic, biodynamic, natural wines, mostly from France, but now also from Italy, Spain, and California. And for the moment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I spent over 10 years living in France, so I know the ins and outs of the country pretty well. Spent a lot of
Lucky
time on
you.
The road. It's a wonderful place to spend time, that's for sure. But we, you know, basically realized that the difference between a technologically made wine and a naturally made wine shows in the bottle. Mm-hmm. It shows in the glass. When you take a sip of something, it becomes immediately clear that it's not the same species at
sure.
all.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is an obvious thing. It's not something, I didn't know anything about wine when I first started tasting. It was just about discovery. And we can all tell the difference between a tomato that, you know, was picked green and ripens on a truck using all kinds of chemical gas and was grown without seeing the earth and, you know, really just produced by the agro
machine. Sorts, yeah.
And then a tomato, you know, that's maybe locally grown but not organic, or a tomato that's grown by a small organic farm, or one that you grow in your backyard or mm-hmm, here at
sure.
Roberta's.
Yeah.
We all know the difference in taste. And I think one thing people often forget about wine is that it's an agricultural product. And so those grapes need to be grown mm-hmm. in a certain way. And, you know, winemakers or big companies make choices about how they grow those grapes. And many make choices which are really agro business choices, uh-huh. and others make choices to make beautiful, balanced backyard grapes.
Well said.
So,
yeah.
You know, we really love to drink and discover and share and educate about the backyard grapes that have turned into, you know, really special wines that are filled with passion and love. And it's just, they're a really different thing than industrial wine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's been such a push towards natural wines and biodynamic wines, especially in the past couple of years, and it's interesting that you were one of the first pioneers, I'd say, in the New York market if you started 10 years ago.
Yeah, we started 10 years ago. There were some natural wines on the market at the time, but nobody was calling them natural wines. And, you know, we really started talking about, well, you know, these grapes are grown without any chemicals in the vines, but then they're also more than organic because of the way they're made in the cellar. And there's no certification for this, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So you can't tell by looking at a bottle if something's a natural wine. I mean, you can definitely refer to importers like us, right, where the back label is a guarantee. You know, if it says Jenny and Francois Selections on the back label, it is a natural wine because we don't do anything else. But there is no certification for the winemaking process in Europe at the moment because there's certified organic grapes, wine made from certified organic grapes. But once you go to the cellar, you can add up to 200 different products during winemaking, such as tartaric acid, sugar. You can use reverse osmosis to take away some of the water. You can take away alcohol. You can add wood chips. You can use enzymes and lab yeast with a certain flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things are shunned by what we call natural winemakers. Natural winemakers use their beautifully balanced grapes and they make beautifully balanced wine. And they don't need to correct it with all these things because the grapes, they've done the work in the vineyard
right.
already. And that's where the main part of the work happens.
Sure.
So they make very pretty, well-balanced wines because of all
the quality, the purity of them. Yeah. Now, when you go back to saying that there were wines that were biodynamic or organic that were not labeled as such even 10, 15 years ago, and we look at the way that organic wine has sat on the retail shelves or has been sold in the past decade, and it's always kind of been lumped into this category, mm-hmm. especially in the retail capacity of dusty, kind of, you know, not that attractive, and seemingly yeah. the same labels over and over again.
Yes.
And in the midst of all of that, there were probably many bottles like the ones that you're speaking of,
mm-hmm.
which just weren't labeled as such. So it's almost a catch-22. It's like, do you want to label them mm-hmm. or not? And if it's just more a mark of quality based on who's bringing them in, then that could be enough sometimes too.
Yeah. I mean, I always encourage our producers to get that certification. It is expensive mm-hmm. for a small winemaker to pay for a certification because in addition to getting a European certification, they would also have to get an American certification to sell it in this country
uh-huh.
with the NOP organic label on the wine. I mean, I think it's better for the consumer if it did say
right.
organic. The thing is, organic is not a guarantee to a guarantee of quality either. I'd say you can make bad organic wine, but I would also say that the best wines are made from organically produced grapes
mm-hmm.
and are made naturally. So again, you know, it's not a guarantee of quality, and there are technological wines made from organically grown grapes.
So sure.
The difference being the wines you're talking about, for example, you know, it's companies that are big enough to sort of be all over the place.
Exactly.
In every yeah. teeny retail mm-hmm. shop, and because they produce a lot of wines and they produce, you know, factory amounts of wine. So a small producer, for them to go through the certification is a different story. But there are some of our producers who have, gone through the process,
right.
and more and more are, which is probably a good thing in the end.
The French like to take their time with those kind of things.
Yeah,
so.
That's true.
But when we talk about organic, I mean, natural is going several steps further.
Yes.
So some of the things that you describe in the way that a winemaker can change the wine in the cellar, such as adding lab yeast that have flavor, I mean, that doesn't happen with these. So.
Right. Well, it all starts out, you know, most grape growers are using herbicide and insecticide that's a chemical to spray their weeds and to spray against insects. And so in terms of producing organic grapes, you're using sprays that are organic.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also well, we'll get to biodynamic in a minute, but sprays that are organic, and usually instead of, you know, using kind of Roundup to kill all the weeds, you will plow the vines. And one great thing about plowing is that in terms of the structure of the plant itself, you can have a plant that basically the roots go out horizontally,
mm-hmm.
Because the roots are sitting there waiting for added fertilizer, waiting for rain. But if you're plowing, you're breaking up those small roots, and so the bigger roots are going to dive deep down into the earth and seek other nutrients and seek water,
mm-hmm.
or at least dampness that might be deep down. And so, strangely, in a hotter year, for example, people who are growing and organically and plowing are going to have a much easier time than people who are using chemicals,
right.
because their vines are better structured, better implanted.
Sure.
And so, like in 2003 in Burgundy, for example, everyone said, oh, how were the Chardonnays? You know, were they heavy and alcoholic? And, you know, they really weren't. They were certainly bigger than years.
Sure.
But because the vines are so much better implanted in organically tended vineyards, they had much less difficulty than, you know.
Right. So long term for the consistency over time,
yeah.
it's a long term investment.
For the balance of the wine, balance of the grapes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's one reason why the wines are going to be better,
right,
if
right.
you do everything right. So that's organically produced grapes.
And one more question before we take a break, because we do have an on-air tasting that we're going to do with three of your wines from your portfolio. People that I've spoken with or articles that I've read that have talked about natural wine and the indigenous yeast being used, wild yeast being used, so that the fermentation happens naturally. There's this question of whether or not that really affects the product in the bottle and how often times a re-fermentation could potentially happen. And I've spoken to you before, you've said it maybe once in your whole 10 years have you ever seen that really happen, but can you just go and explain that a little bit further?
Yeah, I mean, you need yeast for your wine to ferment. So the choice is, you know, you harvest your grapes, you kill off all the natural yeast if they're not already dead from all the chemicals, you add more sulfites on the harvest to kill off all the bacteria and yeast, and then you start your fermentation with a lab yeast, a store-bought yeast. Or you can harvest your organic grapes, and there's lots of yeast on the skin of the grapes that are naturally present, mm-hmm. in the environment, and it's those yeasts that can act to begin the fermentation and convert the sugar into alcohol. For me, if you have many, many different yeasts working, you're going to have a much more interesting, complex wine,
mm-hmm.
than just one yeast that you've chosen ahead of time that's definitely going to guarantee one flavor profile.
Right.
So, I mean, the one flavor profile idea is certainly safer in a way. Like, if you're looking to make a product that's going to be the same every year,
mm-hmm.
no variety, you know, that the vintage won't affect it, the weather won't affect it, then you want a lab yeast.
Right.
But if you're looking to express something of the place and time,
mm-hmm.
that the wine comes from, and even begin to talk about terroir,
right.
then you need to use natural yeast. So, I mean, then once your sugar is fermented and turned into alcohol, there's no risk of re-fermenting or this or that. I mean, it's just about, you know, you want to make sure you have a stable wine in the bottle.
Yeah.
And
these winemakers are very seasoned, so they know what they're doing.
They know how to, know how to make wine.
Great. Well, we'll be right back. You have three wines from your portfolio, which we're going to taste together. So please stay tuned.
Thank you.
Welcome back to At the Root of It. This is Erin Fitzpatrick with my guest this afternoon, Jenny Lefcourt from Jenny and Francois Selections. And for any listeners, please feel free to call in at 718-497-2128 if you have any questions for Jenny. And as I mentioned before the break, we're about to start a little on-air tasting with three of the wines from Jenny's portfolio, all of which are kind of unsung varietals from three different regions in France, which Jenny has brought, which certainly goes along with the philosophy of terroir and just creating an appreciation for things which have grown, which are not to be uprooted to replant with more popular varietals, and which a lot of your winemakers, as you've mentioned, have really kind of championed these varietals in their work.
Definitely. I mean, I would say that, so we were talking about organic viticulture earlier. In addition to organic viticulture, a lot of these producers work biodynamically. And part of biodynamic viticulture is really developing biodiversity, mm-hmm. a diverse ecosystem. What they're interested in is not having sort of the monoculture of the vines dominating everything. Oftentimes they'll have farms, full-fledged farms, and wheat fields, and fruit trees, and flowers, and animals.
All which contribute to what's in your glass.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that biodiversity includes a kind of micro diversity of the soil, which mm-hmm. More and more we're beginning to realize we are really killing off even just the micro diversity of the planet with all the chemicals we're using in the soil. So, you know, these producers are very interested in feeding their worms, as they uh-huh. say, you know, just really promoting the life of the soil, and the life of the soil leads to healthy vines, which lead to healthy grapes. And so part of that, in addition, is also preserving grape varietals that are less known or almost extinct, mm-hmm. Or at least unsung.
Yeah.
So the first wine that I've poured here is from Didier Monchauvet. He's in Burgundy. Didier and Joël make beautiful wines. He bought just a few, like a half a hectare of vines in the mid-80s, and then developed, bought some vines and rented others, and he has a whole biodynamic farm where he produces, among other things, this aligoté.
Aligoté, yeah. So where Burgundy is king for Chardonnay, aligoté is its younger sister, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. And really, you know, a lot of it stays in France. Not much is uh-huh. brought to the U.S. And
that's a beautiful bottle.
It's a pretty bottle. It's a very pretty wine.
Interesting that he's using screw cap.
Yes, he uh-huh. is using screw cap, so they're not all Neanderthal, old-fashioned.
Right.
I mean, they don't shun modern technique. They use modern technique to preserve as much as possible what nature gives them.
Yeah.
That's the basic idea. So aligoté has traditionally been look down upon. It's a high acid grape.
It surely is, yeah.
But when it's grown properly with low yields and pruned correctly and the balance is right and the ripeness is optimum, it is a really beautiful, lovely grape in its own right.
Definitely get that lime zest mm-hmm. on the nose.
Yeah, it's very citrus.
It's a perfect wine for the simmer.
It's beautiful, mm-hmm. fresh, refreshing.
Definitely.
Wine, absolutely.
And oftentimes going to get aligoté for very, very good value in Burgundy as well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes less expensive than, you know, you might have a Chardonnay that's, you know, machine harvested and not made nearly as well as an aligoté, which, you know, is biodynamically produced and then It's, yeah, this is a great value wine, definitely.
I like it a lot, yeah.
Didier Montchauvet.
Numéro deux.
Numéro deux. Robert and Bernard Plageul are in the Southwest, and this is a region that's not so well known in the U.S. in general. The appellation is Gaillac, and Bernard Plageul runs this vineyard now with his wife Miriam, but his father, Robert, did a lot to replant a lot of varieties that had completely disappeared.
Mm.
He went to what's the Museum of Vines, basically,
okay.
And he got some, clippings or old, seeds of different kinds of varietals that were no longer even planted in Gaillac, but which were indigenous to the region, and he replanted many of them. And he planted lots and lots of varietals that we've never even heard of before, but which were really prominent in the region, mostly before phylloxera,
mm-hmm.
which is the disease that killed a lot of vines off in France before, about 100 years ago. So they planted grapes called Mozac Vert, Mozac Noir, Ondenc, Duras, Muscadel, Prunelard. So this wine I brought today is a 2008 Ondenc.
It's 100% varietal, Ondenc?
100% Ondenc.
Wow. This is a first for me. Now, you had mentioned as well, in terms of who is fueling the natural wine movement and a lot of the youth or youthful generation who have taken over the reins from their fathers in the southwest of France is particularly to attribute for that.
There are a lot of young producers who even come from other professions into mm-hmm. winemaking and are kind of shaking things up.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Didier Montchauvet, for example, he came from nothing and started making wine. Bernard Plageul, obviously his father, following in his father's footsteps and generations in that family of winemakers, but they're one of the rare family, they're one of the oldest winemaking families in Gaillac, but they're also one of the rare families who are really looking to preserve the traditions that were disappearing in that region, which is so special and varied and interesting. And
yeah.
It's
a very cool wine.
It's kind of a bigger white than the first one we tasted.
A little bit nutty, yeah. More akin to a Rhone white.
Yeah, definitely more body to it, more fruit, pears and
yeah.
white fruits and white flowers, maybe a little honeysuckle.
For sure, yeah. delicious. Ondenc.
It's a nice wine to have with a fish dinner.
Yeah, a little bit of a richer fish, for sure. Yeah. Cool. And then number three, we have Le Cousin Rouge.
Number three, Olivier Cousin. Dear to my heart, I spent a lot of time in his vineyard. He was always putting us up at his home with his family. Actually, his son is in town right now, Clément.
Oh, cool.
But Olivier Cousin is another biodynamic producer. He actually plows with a horse. So one great thing about that is that plowing, obviously, if you're plowing with a tractor, it can take some extra petrol, and that's kind of counterproductive in certain ways, but he works with a horse. He really lives in a very low impact kind of
lifestyle yeah.
and burns the he when he prunes the vines, he uses the vine clippings to heat his house, and
so everything's full circle.
Exactly. But he makes beautiful wine. He is in Anjou, Olivier Cousin, and he makes Gamay, he makes some Chardonnay, he makes a lot of Cabernet Franc, and this wine is a very, very old vine, Grolot, which I've seen spelt numerous ways. He spells it G-R-O-L-L-E-A-U.
Okay.
Grollo. Often used for rosé mix blends in the Loire. Rarely to make a 100% red.
Cool.
It's more often
this has that Loire kind of minerality to it on the nose too, which you often get from a Cabernet Franc up there, that little
absolutely
graphite nose.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. It has the definite mineral backbone there.
That is rocking.
And tons of red fruit, mm-hmm, and silky minerality with lots of
delicious, yeah,
plums and raspberry, blackberry. And
that'd be nice with a little chill on it for the summertime too.
Absolutely, very refreshing.
Well, these are great.
I mean, that's what I could just, you know, it's an easy, all of these are easy to drink, you know, easy summer sipping, and yet they're so complex, and you always want to come back again and again and say, what was that in there? You know, it's not.
Well, that's what we think about when we have heard the terms that wine is an art form and wine is living mm-hmm in the bottle. These are the wines that really speak that.
Definitely.
Speak that language. So, testimony to you and what you've, mm-hmm, and the work that you've done too for providing access to all of them.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what is your website for anyone who'd like to look at the wines online?
Our website is jennyandfrancois.com.
Great. And then you had mentioned as well, what's in store for the fall. You might be looking at more and more wines to take on as well from across the world.
Yeah. Well, we just got in our first one from the Piedmont.
Oh,
Cassina,
nice.
Corte. We're very excited about this small, also biodynamic producer.
And where will they be producing?
That we brought in two reds from them to start with. And we also just got in another wine from the Loire called Cahu and Prodige, which is also some more Grollo.
Okay, great. So we have a little affinity for this wine here. Yeah,
absolutely.
Very cool. Well, we do have to wrap up today, but thank you so much for your expertise in this subject and for bringing these wines. They're fantastic.
Thank you so much for having me, Erin.
Definitely. And for our listeners, please, for any looking at Jenny's wines, you can check out jennyandfrancois.com. And thank you to Whole Foods, our sponsor this afternoon. And please stay tuned for Jimmy Carboni's beer sessions, which will be up this afternoon at 5:00, just after this. Cheers.
El antifaz que tu maldad cubría cayó para exhibirte tal como eres.